the earlier part of the week, I was praying and asking the Lord for direction for the message today. And I couldn't understand why the Lord laid a certain word on my heart at the beginning of the week, because it just wasn't connecting. I don't know if you've ever had that, but it just wasn't connecting with what I was thinking and what I thought the Lord would maybe have me to share, direction He was going. And the word was opportunity, and it just kept coming back to me, opportunity. But Lord, what are you trying to say, opportunity? And as I continued to seek the Lord yesterday, this message came really clear. And the word opportunity is found a couple times in this message, and I think you'll understand as we go along. Turn with me in your Bibles to Psalms 127. The priceless value of children. As you know, it's a blessing to have children. It's a blessing to have our children growing up. It's a blessing to see them getting married to godly partners. It's a blessing to see them having children and having a vision, purpose, a goal, a desire to raise a godly family. And I guess as I was pondering some of these things, I was again... We just had another little grandchild, and what a blessing just to consider the priceless value of this child. How we value our children will affect how we treat them, what we do with them, what we teach them. You know, there's just multiple things that it will affect as we think about the value of our children. It affects how we train them. It affects how much time we invest in them. And most importantly, it will affect the outcome of their life and their eternity, I trust, as well. So this morning, I'd just like to raise the value of our children in our minds. And I know that I'm talking to a group of people who value your children. I don't feel like things are way out of line in this area among us here. But I found as I looked at this subject myself, I needed sharpening. And to realize the priceless value that we have in our homes. How much value are we placing upon them? I thought about another illustration concerning the priceless value of children that King Solomon understood. There was two women that came one day to King Solomon, and though they were both, they only had this one child, and they were both claiming it as their own, that this was my child. And there was a big argument there about whose child this really was, and Solomon was to give a judgment on whose child this was. And so he said, very simple words, bring me a sword. We all wouldn't know what the intent would be, right? Divide it. Divide this child and both of you can have a piece. And all of a sudden, the priceless value of the child became very real in the mother's heart, whose this child was. And she said, no, just let her have it. You see that? The priceless value of a child. I don't know what comments you've heard in our day and age that we live in about children. I've heard a few. You've heard a few, I'm pretty sure of that. You see a lot. I think it's maybe good for us just briefly to even consider what some of those things are that we hear. It's not all on a negative slant, but there is quite a bit, actually. What's our general feel in our society of children? Any thoughts on that? They're a bother. Others. They take too much of our time. And I have down here that can't wait to get them out of my hair, you know, send them to the school, send them to the daycare, so I can go about my day, you know, my job. Yes. Depending who you talk to, they're a priceless blessing. That's why I say it's not all negative. There are those out there who really value their children, and you see it. And there's a difference. Even if they're not even in a, quote, Christian atmosphere, there are those who value their children, and that's a blessing. I think, though, at large, I think we'd find probably more on the negative side. Others. Yes. Okay, I figured that would come up. When you call your children kids, and I know it's a relative term, maybe a very general term, like we would use the word children, and yet I think there's some real value in considering, why would we call our children kids? They're not baby goats. Our children don't appreciate being called baby goats. Do you, children? Do you like to be called baby goats? That's what a kid is. Not baby goats. Yeah, we just need to follow that all the way through, right? If they're kids, then we're billy goats and, yeah, nannies. Yes, Eric. Some people would just simply rather have a dog or a pet. They're a lot less bother. That's why we see the prices we do on dogs. That's serious, isn't it? And we've lost the value of children, the priceless value of children. I've heard them called brats. I've heard statements like, they're driving me nuts. They're driving me up the wall. How can you stand having 8 children? I can hardly hack 2 of them. And those are the kind of comments we get. And I wonder how much of that pressure we feel as God's people in some of those things. Do we feel that pressure as well? And I just like to hold up the value of children. Let's read here in Psalm 127. I'm going to read 127 and go right into 128. Except the Lord build the house, they labor in vain that build it. Except the Lord keep the city, the watchman waketh, but in vain. It is vain for you to rise up early and to sit up late, to eat the bread of sorrows. For so he giveth his beloved sleep. Lo, children are an heritage of the Lord, and the fruit of the womb is his reward. As arrows are in the hand of a mighty man, so are children of the youth. Happy is the man that hath his quiver full of them. They shall not be ashamed, but they shall speak with the enemies in the gate. Blessed is everyone that feareth the Lord, that walketh in his ways. For thou shalt eat the labor of thine hands. Happy shalt thou be, and it shall be well with thee. Thy wife shall be as a fruitful vine by the sides of thine house. Thy children like olive plants round about thy table. Behold, that thus shall the man be blessed that feareth the Lord. The Lord shall bless thee out of Zion, and thou shalt see the good of Jerusalem all the days of thy life. Yea, thou shalt see thy children's children, and peace upon Israel. I have four things I'd like to share concerning the priceless value of children. And the first one is found right here, and that is the blessing of children. And I know that it's maybe a bit redundant to call them priceless and the value and then call it the blessing of children, but I think we need to understand the blessing of children. If we don't understand the blessing of children, it affects how we view our children. In the Old Testament, you can read pretty much anywhere in the Old Testament and find that there was women who were barren. And because they were barren, it was a bit of a disgrace to be barren in the Old Testament. And it was almost as though it was a curse upon their life, and they would beg God for children. And when a baby was born, after the parents had waited for many years for a child, what do you think was the value of that child? It happens in our day as well. The value of that child, that price just goes really high. Abraham and Sarah waited 40 years for Isaac. Isaac and Rebekah waited 20 years for Jacob and Esau to be born. Jacob and Rachel waited 20 years till Joseph was born. Now, he had Leah and he had children with Leah as well, but he waited 20 years for Joseph to be born. Rachel was the mother. Ruth and Boaz waited 12 years for Obed. Zacharias and Elizabeth waited 50 years for John the Baptist. Now, we don't comprehend some of those things hardly, but it's all over the Bible. And you know, all of them found it a great blessing. All of these examples, they found it a great blessing, the blessing of children. I realize this morning that there may be some, even among us, who have difficulty or maybe can't have children. And the pain and the anguish for the longing of a child that goes with that, I understand. And I just bear with me on this. I know it's painful if you're in that kind of a situation. God still has a purpose for you if you find yourself there as a couple. God still has a purpose for you, a very good purpose. In verse 3 of chapter 127 here, he says, "Lo, children are a heritage of the Lord." And I don't know if you've studied that word heritage at all, but that word heritage in the Greek, it refers to it as an heirloom, something that is valuable, that has been passed on in your family. It could be an article of clothing. It could be a piece of furniture. It could be, you know, a lot of various things that it could be. And it's been passed down from generation to generation. That's the word he uses here when he said that children are a heirloom of the Lord's. So that's showing us something of value there, that how the Lord looks at our children, and how that he has passed down this precious, valuable possession of his to us in our children. Think about it from that angle. And then in chapter 128, verse 3, again verse 3, he calls the children, he says that it's like olive plants round about thy table. Children being like olive plants round about the table. Now, in our day, we don't really consider what that might mean, but back in the day when this was written, to have an olive plant, to have multiple olive trees, you were a wealthy man by the amount of olive trees that you had. Because of the value, they were both valuable for food and they were valuable for oil. And oil was a precious commodity that could be would be sold, pressed and sold in the day. And so it was a valuable thing to have many trees. And he uses that picture and he says, this is how it is with our children. Around about our table, like olive plants. We are wealthy people to have olive plants sitting around our tables. Happy is the man who has his quiver full of them. He goes on to say in that verse, he says, they shall not be ashamed. Now let me ask you something. Has anyone ever asked you how many children you have? And how did you respond to that? Was there any kind of feeling of being ashamed? Because you know where they're at. I hope not. But I'd like to just lift that up. Sometimes we have that. I felt little nudges of that sometimes. But I don't think we should go there. Not when we value our children as a prized possession, like olive plants around about our table. Happy is the man who hath his quiver full of them. I have seen very shocked looks come across people's faces when you tell them how many children you have. Shocked. They can't figure it out. They don't know how blessed we are and how precious each one is. Number two. Children are fearfully and wonderfully made. We find that in Psalm 139. Am I making those noises? I think I am. Should I just pull it away a little? No, let's try that. Okay. Children are fearfully and wonderfully made. In Psalm 139, I'm going to read in verse 13, he says, for thou hast possessed my reins, thou hast covered me in my mother's womb. I will praise thee, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Marvelous are thy works, and that my soul knoweth right well. My substance was not hid from thee when I was made in secret and curiously wrought in the lowest parts of the earth. Thine eyes did see my substance, yet being unperfect. And in thy book all my members were written, which in continuous were fashioned, when as yet there was none of them. I think it's good for us, as we think about the priceless value of our children, to consider these verses, how fearfully and how wonderfully our children are made. And it's the marvel. It's a miracle, isn't it? Isn't it a miracle how God brings that all together in a beautiful, harmonious way and produces out of love and out of a beautiful relationship a child? Excuse me. And at birth, I know we hold that little baby and we marvel at the fingers, all five, all ten of them, and we squeeze the toes and we just see how intricately they are made, just everything, the nails and the some of them have the little white around the edge of the nail already, and you know, and the hair, and the, just on and on it goes. The wonder. Excuse me. Just the wonder of how God created this child so perfectly formed. Down even to the lines on the hand and the fingerprints, and you know, soon after they're born, they dab them in ink and they put it on paper, and that's their fingerprint, and they put the foot on, and yeah, all of this stuff. Isn't that beautiful? How fearfully and wonderfully. How did that all come about? God was very personally involved right from the get-go. Before the substance was even there, God was so intricately involved. So much so that, you know, we don't read of many books that God has, but here's one of them that it mentions that he has. In my book, in thy book, all my members were written. Isn't that amazing? He had a special touch that he gives to each one. If God so fearfully and wonderfully made each one of us, don't you think the value and the purpose that he had for each child, shouldn't that escalate in our own minds as parents? Shouldn't that value, that priceless value, escalate in our minds as we consider God being so detailedly involved that he wrote down my members in the book, in his book before I was even born? He wrote down how it's going to be. Because they were created by God, God has a purpose for how he made them. Now, some of us aren't very content with that purpose. And we try to do many things, maybe. Can you improve on perfect? Can you improve on what God has already made? People try. People try to improve on that. And they'll try it with all kinds of things, you know. They don't like their hair color, so they dye their hair. And they don't like how their eyebrows are, so they pluck them out. And, you know, and they do all kinds of things to make themselves, try to make themselves look better than what God made them. And yet, have you ever heard this statement? Coming from a very worldly background, sister, just a woman that doesn't have any, quote, Christian upbringing, and they say about our children, especially the girls, oh, you're so beautiful, it's just so lovely. And they didn't have anything, no makeup on, no nothing, just pure beauty the way God made them. Can we accept that, sisters? Can we accept the way God made us. You don't like your nose. You don't like your ears. You don't like this and that. Can we just accept it that God designed you this way? Just like this. And there's beauty in that. And we destroy God's beauty when we try it some other way. If God has a purpose for us in being created by Him, He does have a purpose for us. As parents, what is our responsibility in guiding our children to the purpose why God created them? What is our responsibility as parents? Let's think about that. Think about issues of purity. Instilling into our children God's values on purity. And that becomes very, You know, it's maybe not the most comfortable subject for you as parents, for us as parents to address to our children. But it's so necessary, especially in the day and age we live in. It's so necessary to teach them the value of purity, that God has a special plan for their lives. God made them perfect. And we could go on that subject. Number three, the priceless value of our children. Children, this is number three, children are born with an empty slate. Think about the innocence of a child. They're born, they're totally dependent on mom and dad to take care of them. They're totally dependent upon them to give them direction as they grow older. And as parents, we have a God-given responsibility. I will say it's a privilege to train, to equip, to teach them all the valuable things they will need for life. They come with an empty slate. And God has given us the responsibility as parents to teach them, to train them, to equip them for life. How to face the challenges of life. And I will say this, and I've said this to my own children sometimes, but in normal family life, it brings us all the opportunities we need to teach our children the lessons of life, the lessons to learn in life, right in our own homes, just in normal family life. And what I'm saying is that sometimes we get this picture, or maybe it's just me, but we get this picture, we get this, you know, we need to sit down with our children and we need to teach them. But sometimes it is just the most valuable lesson that comes in life when it's just everyday family life. And something happens and we can sit down and we can talk about it. And it equips our children in a way that they couldn't grasp it maybe before. Just normal family life brings all the opportunities, there it is, all the opportunities that we need to teach our children. It's a classroom to learn all the necessary skills right at home. And sometimes we lose sight of the joy and the privilege that we have as parents. There are things like attitudes. Happens right there in our homes, right? Attitudes. Sometimes they're good ones. Sometimes they're not so good ones. And we have the privilege, the opportunity as parents to direct those attitudes. Sometimes there's things like pouting. Now, none of you children ever pout, I hope. You never pout. Huh? You always just have a happy smile on your face, at least Sunday mornings. Children's lesson, we smile, right? You ever pout? Because we couldn't have our way? But those are very valuable things. You know that King Ahab never learned that as a child, you shouldn't pout. He was a king, and he laid on his bed and turned his face to the wall and wouldn't eat. And his wife came in to ask him what was wrong. Now, he didn't say he was pouting, but that was pretty obvious by what he said then.
So-and-so wouldn't let me have his vineyard.
Oh, never mind, I'll take care of that. We know the story, right? Things didn't go so well. And that was King Ahab. If we never learn how to overcome pouting, we can get as old as Brother Joe and still have that problem in life to pout. God's not well pleased, is he? How about squabbles? You know, there's a lot of church squabbles because parents have never taught their children that we don't squabble. We work our problems out. We talk about our issues. We talk about our problems. And we come to a place of agreement together, and we harmonize together as a family, and we don't just argue and fuss and squabble. I should have learned more of that growing up. Not any fault on my parents. It was my fault. Sharing, I think that's a good thing. Sharing, right, children? We talk about sharing. Now, it can be also verbally sharing, but I think even just learning how to share our things between siblings, it's a valuable thing that we need to learn. Children come with an empty slate. And I think of these 2 and 3 year olds, and I had the privilege of working around a few of those here just recently, and I thought about this because here's what was going on. You know, children ask a lot of questions at about that age. They ask a lot of questions. Why? Why are you doing that? Why are you going over there? What are you doing? And on the questions go, right? And I remember as a young father, to my shame, I remember feeling a little agitated about all those questions coming. I can't hardly get anything done, you know, trying to answer all those questions all the time. And it was why, you know. Could we flip that around? And say, what an opportunity I have right now to answer all those whys, to answer all those questions that are coming. What an opportunity I have. You see, if we look at our children, the priceless value that they are, I think it would change us, wouldn't it? It would change us. I think I wrote this. I missed something here. This is what I wanted to put in there. Priceless value of children. So I would like to encourage us, when those questions come, look at it as opportunity. Opportunity. This is my God-given privilege to instill facts. This is my God-given opportunity to instill truth. Truth from the Word of God. This is my opportunity to shape the thinking of my child. There are struggles, there are struggling people today as adults who are only now learning what it means to respond rightly in situations, what it means to surrender their will, what it means to get along with others. And you know, if you've been there, you know it's a painful journey when you have to try to learn those things in your teenage years, in your 20s and 30s and 50s and 60s and 70s. You know it's a painful journey. And what an opportunity we have as parents to help our children walk through those things now in their young life, in their early stages, when they're very moldable. And you can shape the way of their thinking. Child, you're not thinking correctly here. Let's think about it from this angle. And let's look at it from this perspective. Oh, and they adapt. We as adults, we scratch our heads a while yet. And then we mess up some more. Because we have a hard time learning at our stage of life. We do our children a, and I have it capitalized, H-U-G-E. We do our children a huge disfavor when we neglect these opportunities in their young years. We do them a huge disfavor. We could flip that around and say we do them a huge favor to help them sort through those little squabbles, those little issues in everyday normal family life. We do them a huge favor. And sometimes coming back to this whole idea of if we've missed some of that in our youth and the struggle that is, maybe it was our parents. They didn't maybe know how to help us think right. And I think it's very important that we can, first of all, yeah, we can recognize that some of those things were maybe failures on their part, but we absolutely dare not and don't have any, any authority, that's maybe not the right word, to blame our parents for things they didn't instill and that I'm struggling with now. We have no right to point fingers at them. We have choices that we need to make ourselves, and those choices are important. If we want to help our children as parents, here's something else that plays right alongside of our children having an empty slate, and we want to teach them, we want to help them. But if we want to help our children as parents, there's a few things that we need to be free from ourselves. One is reaction. You all relate to that? Reactions. There are men who have said, I will never be like my dad. And today, they're just like him. We need to be free from those kind of reactions. We can't see clearly to instruct and guide our children if we have those kind of reactions brewing in our lives. We need to be free from bitterness. That is a huge one that people tend to struggle with. Parents struggle with them, with those kind of things, being free from bitterness. That means if we have that in our lives, guess what that means? That means we're holding somebody by the throat and we haven't let go. He did this wrong to me, or he did this wrong to my parents. Sometimes it's that. Sometimes it's a third-party offense. You weren't really involved. And we pick up those bitterness things. It will affect our children, and it affects how we teach them. We need to be free from blaming others. Those are very powerful truths. If you're going to be a parent, to guide your home in the way God has, that we need to be free from those things. If we would teach our children, we need the grace of God in our own hearts, in our own lives, so that we can show our children how it's done. You know, children learn by example. So we could probably pop out a lot of different examples of that, you know. I think it was said here this morning about, who said that? I don't recall who said it, but something about to the effect that they didn't realize until they weren't pricked in their heart until they saw it in their children. You know, we need to be alert and awake on those things. We need the grace of God in our own lives to think rightly, to forgive others, to show how to love others who are hard to love, how to get along with our neighbors, how to bear patiently with the flat spots of others. We have them, don't we? And we see them in other people. We need those things. How to believe the best about others. How to not assume things, but rather ask questions instead of making statements. All those things are just very practical things that we need to learn. Our children come with a very empty slate on those things. And to be able to practically, as parents, help them through those things as the opportunity arises. Number four, lastly, children have an eternal being. As we consider the priceless value of our children, we need to realize that they have an eternal being. It's called the soul of man. When God breathed into Adam's nostrils the breath of life, it says he became a living soul. And a living soul is one who will eternally, he will never die. That eternal soul lives on in eternity. While the flesh perishes, while the flesh goes back to dust, there's a soul within each child, within each one of us that's precious, that has tremendous value, that will last for eternity. And I think if we're going to have if we understand the priceless value of our children, I think it's going to be at the forefront, this one right here. Maybe I should have put that number one. But we're going to understand this child has eternal value. This little baby that was born has an eternal soul. It will one day spend eternity somewhere. And that needs to be in the forefront of our influence as we think about our influence upon them, our goals for them. And isn't it that's really at the bottom of why it's so priceless and valuable? Because they're an eternal soul that God made. Our children are, in a sense, loaned to us by God. You've probably heard that before, that our children are loaned to us by God. That's a pretty big responsibility. It's an awesome responsibility that God gives us to bring each child to see God's special purpose for them. I think it's good for us as parents to tremble at that responsibility. I do. I have. I need sharpened. To tremble at that kind of responsibility that God would give me, a child that has a never-dying soul, to direct it, to guide it, to teach, to instruct. And children, let me just say this. Sometimes you don't and won't understand why Dad doesn't let you do certain things. You may not understand that. Do you know what? They're seeing an eternal soul in you that will spend eternity somewhere. And they know that this path will lead you places that you don't want to end up. And they give you that instruction, and you may not quite understand what all they're trying to share with you in those avenues. But open your ears, open your heart to those things. Without God's help, we wouldn't be able to lead and to direct these precious, valuable souls back to God. We need God's help. I know when God gave us children, you know, it drove us to God. So we realized we don't have what it takes. as parents. We've never done this before. This is our first time. We don't know how this is going to turn out, but we want it to turn out well. And it drove us to God. God, help us as parents. And I'll say we haven't done it always right and had to come back and redo and repent of some things, turn our hearts back to our children. And you know, that verse in Malachi speaks into that, doesn't it? The hearts of the fathers be turned to the children, and the children's hearts turned to their fathers, lest I come and smite the earth with a curse. It helps us get a vision for the purpose and lives of our children when we see them as eternal, never dying souls. What can I do as a parent to make a difference for eternity in this young, impressionable child? And you mothers, you may never know the impact that you make to take 10 minutes out of your busy, busy, busy day as a busy mother. Just taking 10 minutes with that child to sit down with the child and to read them their favorite Bible story. It might be Daniel in the lion's den. You know, it might be the idol that Nebuchadnezzar set up. That's their favorite one. You know, and they just want mom to read that to them again. Take the time. It's a priceless thing that you're doing. Take the time to do it and impress upon them. You know, children, we sometimes ours have said, no, we don't want it out of the storybook. Just tell us. Maybe you're working, washing dishes. Mom, just tell us that story. That's so valuable. Think about the impressions that you can make upon the minds of your children if you'll take those opportunities. A word for us as dads, in making impressions upon our children. How important is church to you? How do we teach our children the importance of church when it's not important to us? How important is it, dads, to have a devotional time with the family? How important is that to us? Our children will pick up what's important to us. How important is it to us as dads to be under authority? Governmental authority, other areas of authority that we... How important is that to us? How are we going to teach our children when we ourselves can't be under authority? You know, we provide for them physically, and that's right and good. The scriptures would teach us that. But are we in a good place spiritually ourselves? How's our walk with God ourselves? God's asking us as dads to supply directional guidance to our home, bring clarity to issues that need addressed. And sometimes we as dads, we miss those beautiful opportunities when our children are younger. And then we wonder, why are my children rebellious in their teenage years? And they won't listen to me when they get older. Why is that? Many times it started because we missed some precious opportunities. I believe God can restore those things, but I think it's good for us to consider when we have younger children. Get involved in your children's lives. Get involved in the things that they want to tell you, It might be so trifling, and I've got so many things going and so many things to do, and the phone's ringing, and the people are wanting to get this work done, but my boy has a little story he wants to tell Dad. You take time for him now. He'll hear you when he's older. You disregard those things, and it tends to be that way when they get older. They disregard what Dad has to say. He didn't have time for me. The eternal value of a child. I came across this. Empires fall, houses crumble, cattle die, machinery rusts away, but a child lives on and on. In the lives of its descendants and in the lives of those he influences, all the way into eternity. You see, it's talking about priorities there, isn't it? How would it be if I, as a dad, honestly wrote down what my priorities are? Where would our children come into that list? Maybe we should make a list every day of what our priorities are. I'd like to read this verse in Matthew 16, verse 26. Jesus said this, "What shall it profit a man if he gain the whole world and lose his own soul? Or what shall a man give in exchange for his soul?" I don't think it violates the scriptures to ask this question. What shall it profit a man to gain the whole world and lose his own children? Or what shall a man give in exchange for the souls of his children? Think about that. Christian parents are selling the souls of their children for stuff, for business, for hobbies, for keeping up with the news. They're selling the souls of their children for technology, for, quote, keeping up with their friends. And their own children are being neglected. They're growing up, and they're missing precious opportunities to equip their children for life and for eternity. Too engrossed in what they want for themselves. And the next generation will suffer because of it. Many are the heartbroken parents who see their children go out into the world or settle for a half-hearted Christian life. And I think it could directly relate to this here, the priceless value of children and how we look at our children. Just like to conclude with some questions for us to consider, myself included. How priceless are my children to me? Children want to be accepted. They want to be loved by their own parents. And when children don't get it from their parents, guess where they turn? They turn to their friends. They turn to others for that acceptance. Are children a blessing to us? And if so, if your children are a blessing to you, if so, do they know that? Do they know that they're a blessing to you? When was the last time you told them that? And I'm not sharing these things to beat us up, but rather to inspire us to maybe a deeper level of parenting. Our children are fearfully and wonderfully made by God. Are we instilling into Are we instilling that into their minds? Are we instilling into the minds of our children that they are fearfully and wonderfully made? They are made exactly how God wanted them to be. And thus, teaching purity. And thus, teaching them to keep themselves from the lusts of the flesh. Teaching them that God has a purpose for their lives. What are we writing on the empty slate of our children? Do we see that as opportunity? And where are our children on our priority list? Do we feel the responsibility of their eternal soul? I'd like to leave us with that. Do we feel the responsibility of our children's eternal soul? And what are we going to do about that? Do we need to make adjustments in our home, in our lives, because of those things? Is that a burden to us? Have we failed? Do we need to reshore those things back up again? Maybe we had that vision at one time, but it's grown a bit weak, grown a bit dim. We have the opportunity yet today. We don't need to cause our children more suffering down the road because as adults they never learned. We have the opportunity. And if you were like I was, where you realize that I don't have it, God. I don't know how. I don't know how to do this. It's a good time to cry out to the Lord, because God has a way of helping us in those things. I think we should just sing a song, number 652 in our books, What a Friend We Have in Jesus. If you as a couple, you feel a need in your heart this morning, I just invite you, get up off your seat, go back to the prayer room, find yourself a little corner back there, and just have a little time of prayer together. If you feel like there's commitments you need to make, changes you need to make, share together, open your hearts to each other, give you that opportunity this morning. Shall we sing? Let's stand together.